Coming up on NHL Fantasy on Ice. The Lightning and Penguins are in 3-0 holes. Does either team stand a chance in the series? Where to find fantasy value in the Blue Jackets and Islanders during their improbable playoff runs? Plus, players to target and DFS advice for game threes and fours. It's NHL Fantasy on Ice.
Welcome back to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete and Rob here with you, talking fantasy, talking Stanley Cup playoffs, and talking about these two juggernauts, Rob, that are in 3-0 series holes. I can't believe it. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who could have seen this coming?
It's unthinkable, Pete. And I have to say, I spent my entire weekend watching hockey, trying to digest these trends. And yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, I know that either team hasn't won four games yet, the series isn't over, but I really feel like Tampa's in a boatload of trouble here.
Tampa Bay has its work cut out for it. They have to win four in a row, which they're certainly capable of doing based on the regular season, but you have to look at it from the standpoint of they have not lost more than two games in a row in the regular season. They just lost three in a row, and an undisciplined play from their best player at the end of game two really came back to bite them because they were in that game three. I mean, game one was a shocker where they blew the lead. Game two, they didn't show up. Game three, they were right there in the game after Andre Palat's goal. But Columbus, once again, more discipline. And Columbus didn't take a penalty in game three. How about that?
Well, that's the formula to winning. And this is, we need our producer to roll the clips from earlier in the season when I said the Tampa Bay Lightning live and die by the power play. We saw the same thing happen in the playoffs last year when the power play dried up or they didn't get a chance on it. They were not winning a game. Here's a stat for you. In five playoff games since game five against the Caps last year, Stamkos, Kucherov, and Braden Point have combined for a grand total of 0 points.
And Steven Stamkos has nothing in the series so far. He's not really noticeable when you're watching these games. Braden Point, we know he had a breakout season last year, improved on it even more this year, but plays with Kucherov. He hasn't shown up either. Victor Hedman was out with an injury in Game 3, so that certainly didn't help matters. But this team is reeling right now, and I look at it from the coaching standpoint. I mean, John Tortorella has completely outclassed John Cooper in this series, in my opinion, from the discipline standpoint, the motivational tactics, and just the resiliency of his group exemplifies the coach. On the other side, things, I mean, John Cooper, people were saying John Cooper should be coach of the year, which I thought was ridiculous at the time, even though they had a historic season, but I think the proof is in the pudding here.
Even coming into the playoffs, I thought it was ridiculous that people were giving John Cooper that praise. I also found it ridiculous that the Lightning signed him to a contract extension before the playoffs began.
I was thinking about that.
It was a lose-lose situation for both parties regardless. And to me, I agree with you. John Cooper is in serious trouble right now because, number one, Stamkos, we mentioned it. He hasn't done anything. Break up the lines. Take this guy off the top power play. I'm sick and tired of the criticism that Ovechkin got for years. Oh, he's not getting it done in the big games. Where's Steven Stamkos? Where is this guy? He doesn't play in the playoffs.
And nobody's talking about him.
No.
I mean, he's a 40-plus
goal
scorer.
He's exempt from criticism.
He's a former 60-goal scorer right in this league. I mean, no, I feel like there's not a lot of heat on him. Everybody's looking at the team collectively, but Hedman was out game three. Nikita Kucherov out because of his own fault, like I mentioned. Where was Steven Stamkos, and does he show up here in Game 4? Because I know he had some strong words toward his team as the captain after Game 1. He said we should be angry, but they haven't been. I mean, Games 2 and 3 have been underwhelming.
Angry? I mean, they need to find more emotion than just anger to come back. They need to find out how to play like a team. Again, having Steven Stamkos, he's a non-impact player at even strength. I can repeat that. He is a non-impact player at even strength. You cannot have a player that logs 20 minutes, not be involved in the game, even in physicality terms. If he's out there hitting, creating some sort of plays, fine. But he's not even doing that. You literally don't even notice when his line is on the ice anymore. It's all the same jersey number to me back there. So get the role players up. Get the rookie going. Anthony Cirelli. Get his line with Killorn a little bit more burnout there. Do something. Don't be afraid to scale back the ice time of Steven Stamkos because currently, right now, through three games, Pete, this is not working.
Now, who needs to step up from the Lightning? I mean, other than Stamkos, do they need more from like a Tyler Johnson? Because Tyler Johnson, we were hyping up coming into the postseason because of his track record. He hasn't done much either. I mean, the second and third lines of this team also have not shown much in this series.
This point, you've got to dig deep. And I'm going to turn back to the third line here. You're looking at the Cirelli line, and then you're also looking at Ryan Callahan's line, a playoff performer that can make a difference at even strength. I know he's older. I know he's more banged up now, but that's all that's left for this team. I mean, you can't look at their blue line. Mikhail Sergachev, he's not stepping up right now. He thrives when Nikita Kucherov is playing well. He thrives when Steven Stamkos is playing well, right? He feeds off of that. But we're not seeing those guys thrive. So you need to turn down the roster at the end, at the bottom of the barrel, and look at these role players to step up and do something.
And you know who has stepped up? We talked about him before the start of the series. We had him as an X factor, or a guy that could change the course of the Blue Jackets season. Matt Duchene, 5 points in the past two games, including the 4-point game in that mammoth game two stunner at Tampa Bay, where Tampa Bay really had no answers for him or his line. But also a lot of those guys that we mentioned are chipping in, right? Boone Jenner's chipping in. Josh Anderson looks great in this series. The physical guys are showing up, and that was the one edge besides, you know, maybe if Bobrovsky was an X factor. I mean, that was the physical edge that we thought might give Columbus a shot in hell in this series.
And Artemi Panarin's playing really well too, very quietly producing better than a point per game in the series. One other player I want to target here is Zach Werenski. His resurgence, I'd say probably from March 1st on in terms of fantasy value, was through the roof, and now you're seeing their play better because of him. You have two guys out there, Seth Jones and Zach Werenski, both skating more than 25 minutes per game, and every shift that they are on the ice, they are not making a single mistake. They are not turning the puck over in their own zone. They are skating it out with ease, making a good first pass, and that is so underrated at this time of year.
And you know who also has stepped up, I meant to mention? Oliver Bjorkstrand. I mean, he was kind of a sneaky sleeper guy that we were mentioning around the trade deadline. If he was playing on a line with Duchene, if he was, you know, getting elevated placement, I mean, that guy looked unbelievable in Game 3. He scored a goal, a couple of quality shots. I mean, Oliver Bjorkstrand has been a second or third line guy for this team most of the year. But this is the time of year when you're getting more from Oliver Bjorkstrand than you are from Steven Stamkos. You're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you're not. You're sitting pretty on that one. And I also want to look at Columbus, their Twitter account this morning. They tweeted out this: "We were going to make a clever joke about Lightning, but that wouldn't have been shocking." Complete and utter burn there. That, I think that's just a funny storyline too, because if you log onto Twitter, all you're going to see is people just saying, "Oh my gosh, my bracket's busted, this, that, or the other, fill in the blank about the Lightning." So
speaking of brackets, I mean, a lot of them are going to go off the rails. I mean, both you had the Capitals, I had the Bruins, so we're still in decent shape as far as our champion, but who is the front runner in the Eastern Conference based on what you've seen over these first two games in each series? I mean, I think that it has to be one of those two teams, even though you look at the trendy picks, you know, the trendy upsets of the Islanders if they pull it off, or the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, do those teams stand a chance to come out of the East, you think?
I'm not ready to say that. I would like to acknowledge the Islanders, though, not in terms of a contender standpoint, but what they've done against Pittsburgh has been really something to marvel at. I think the first thing I noticed in that series, to me, is one player, Jordan Eberle, who we've seen this with Trotz before. He'll kind of put a good player on a third or fourth line role throughout the regular season, and if that team makes the playoffs, all of a sudden, that player elevates. We saw it with Jacob Vrana last year for the Caps. All of a sudden, he's on the second line, first line, right? Same thing with Jordan Eberle now, who's playing with Barzal. He is producing like the player that we knew him to all throughout his career, even dating back to the Edmonton Oilers. So that's the player in this series that really makes me think, okay, this Islanders team not only has a chance to close out Pittsburgh in four, but really will be a tough out regardless of who they play from here on out.
And Brock Nelson as well has completely elevated his game in the postseason. We knew there was a matchup discrepancy with Crosby Malkin. Nelson has been phenomenal in this series, and Crosby also does not have a point. No points for Jake Guentzel. But yeah, Jordan Eberle, when you look back to his one postseason opportunity, he had no goals, I think, in 13 games when they went two rounds that one year. and you know, beat the Sharks, and then ended up losing to the Ducks. But yeah, he has 3 goals in 3 games, and it's pretty amazing. We called it. We were talking about him having or deserving the opportunity to play on the top line with Matthew Barzal late in the season. Finished strong, contract year. Better late than never, right, for Jordan Eberle.
And I think just a quick note on Pittsburgh's behalf here is that they don't have the role players they used to have in seasons past to step up and take pressure off Crosby. So if Crosby's not producing, which he's not, he has no points like you mentioned, then they really have, in my opinion, they look completely lost and have a much bleaker chance to get back in this series than Tampa still does against the Blue Jackets.
And I think Malkin needs to be a little more disciplined too. There's too much nonsense going on after the play, after the game in game two. The frustration is mounting. I know these teams that are used to winning multiple rounds are on the verge of getting swept. I mean, it's pretty obvious why they're upset, but these are championship caliber players, and you just expect more from an Evgeny Malkin in terms of his mentality moving forward. I do think the Penguins will probably win game four, but then based on everything we've seen, the Islanders probably finish them off in game number five. How do you see this series shaping out?
I think it's done in five, and I don't think there's any more to say about it other than that. I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if Pittsburgh found a way to get back in this thing.
And how about Robin Lehner silencing any goaltending talk? I mean, this guy is absolutely for real. He trusts the team in front of him. The amazing thing about that team, we've talked about four strong lines all season, but nobody on the ice is a liability. We talk about, right, you were going into the Tampa series, you were saying Dan Girardi sometimes is a liability. Each team has its weak links, but the Islanders don't have one. And they were actually playing Tom Kunackle on the second line with Brock Nelson, and he has been a monster in this series. Game one almost scored 2 goals. They were both taken away. Game two, he assisted on Nelson's fast break goal. And I just think that's the familiarity, and that's the championship caliber role player that the Penguins used to have and are now lacking.
Let's go to two series here that have been even so far. Boston, Toronto have both split, and then I would even say Washington, Carolina has been a little bit more competitive than these two have. But starting with Boston and Toronto, big storyline coming out there. Nazem Kadri has an in-person hearing in our offices here in Manhattan today. That usually means, at the absolute worst, it is a one-game sentence, but this could be 3 to 5 from everything that I've read online. Pretty nasty cross-check in retaliation to a Jake DeBrusk hit earlier in the game. You know what, Pete, without Nazem Kadri on the 3C spot in the first power play, you got to be feeling good about your Boston pick right now.
Well, the Bruins right now have a couple guys banged up, right? Marcus Johansson's ill. He's not traveling as of the moment. Torrey Krug's banged up, and Jake DeBrusk is banged up after getting cross-checked in the face by Nazem Kadri. Now, Jake DeBrusk in that game was all over the place. He had a couple of high-danger scoring chances. He was playing feisty earlier in the game. He was getting feisty a little bit with Nazem Kadri. And then, of course, Kadri retaliated when DeBrusk hit Patrick Marleau. So that was how that whole thing escalated. But I think it was as a result of Jake DeBrusk being a difference maker on both ends of the ice.
Totally. And that's the way that we know Boston can play. When those guys are going, it really, really helps. Do you think William Nylander, who will shift over to center in Nas's absence, do you think that is a player that is capable of holding down that 3C spot? Or do you think that Mike Babcock should get a little bit more creative?
I think it's fine. I think the Leafs have a better third line even without Kadri than the Boston Bruins. I mean, it's few and far between where those third liners contribute for Boston. So I think it boils down to, can Austin Matthews finally show up for a playoff game? I mean, we're talking about over multiple seasons now, and another one of these elite players that's nowhere to be found at the most important time of year.
It's really bizarre that a player of his caliber has not broke out in the playoffs yet, but we're only 2 games into this one. Would not be shocked at all to see him have a 3-goal game, and then we'll never even say that. We will never even mention that again. One minor note about that series, I noticed that Hutchinson will now be backing up Anderson over Sparks. There's something weird going on in that Toronto dressing room. I can't put my finger on it, but that might say a little bit more than meets the eye there.
You know what I noticed in that series? The physical factor. Not only just DeBrusk, but they inserted David Backes. The response from the Bruins, I told you I was worried about them last time we talked, but the physical response from the Bruins across the lineup, and maybe, who knows, maybe it was Gronkowski riling up the fans before. I mean, he was into crazy. It for a guy that just announced his retirement. He looked like he was ready to get back on the playing field there.
It definitely looks like one of the best in-person atmospheres. I hope to get to a game there at some point soon. Going to the Washington series here, they are taking care of business so far against the Canes. But it does worry me a little bit that they can't seem to define the effort for a 60-minute game.
It is strange, right? The third periods of both games, whether you want to say the Caps take it down a notch and get a little lazy or complacent, whatever it is, or Carolina finally starting to cash in on some of their chances. But Svechnikov has looked great in this series. Wallmark, his line mate, has looked great. Dougie Hamilton looks really strong. I mean, this team is a couple of bounces away from splitting one of the first two games. I think maybe deserve to get one of those first two games the way that they came on strong at the end. But they need a more complete effort. And, of course, the Capitals are getting away with it here for now until they face a better opponent.
I saw Sebastian Aho has been reunited with Tara Vinen. That was at practice this morning. That's a cool little trend.
It is.
Those guys really have good chemistry and play well together. Aho got a total cheapy goal off the back glass against Holpe. So, and that's not a knock on him. It just takes one goal to get your confidence back. So that could be the goal that does it for him.
Yeah, he didn't have a goal in like 15 or 16 games dating back to the regular season. So finally finds the back of the net, and even in an unconventional way. And I think that the Hurricanes, that's a sign of a good coach, right? I mean, he stuck with that line ever since they made the Niederreiter trade. But remember, dating to last season, that was the fixture. That was the top line duo, Sebastian Aho and Tara Vinen. So I like that he's, he's abandoning what's worked so far and trying to make a change to give his team a chance at home.
I also noticed one thing too about Niederreiter. It seems that the Caps are really playing him physically. I think trying to take him off of that line, so to speak, at even strength. So we'll see what Sebastian Aho can come up with without kind of that impact from Niederreiter that many people expect him to have.
Yeah, Niederreiter and Ferland both are most valuable when they're not only just being physical but also chipping in points. Both of them have been physical so far, especially Ferland, but he's been getting into the box. I mean,
he got kicked out of the game.
Yeah, so that's not a good thing. You need the scoring touch from each of those two guys to have a chance in this series. And I did mention prior to the start of the series that if Svechnikov blows up, which he has, they have a chance. But clearly, it runs a lot deeper than just one player. And as much as you want to credit the young kid for his immediate impact in this series against the defending champs, it's... Carolina needs more. They just need more.
And then one note about Mrazek. I expected to see McElhinney in this series too, but Mrazek's played really well. I know that the Caps have scored, 4 goals in both games. I mean, that doesn't reflect on Mrazek, though. That's some of the chances that the Caps had were absolute layups. So Mrazek's made some big-time saves in critical moments in games to even get Carolina in a position to get the victory.
I mean, the fact that Carolina even got to overtime with some of those late game scoring chances in the third period of game two is amazing. So
that save on Carlson was amazing with like 10 seconds to go.
Yeah, and I think there was another save on Tom Wilson who also scored. I mean, that line we should mention, right? We always talk about some of the other potent lines around the league, but when Backstrom is rolling, how about Alex Ovechkin as a passer in this series has been elite. Yeah. I don't think we've ever said that before.
I love what they have going on, but I would like to see Ovi cash in some goals too. I think that would, seal the deal in this one, so to speak. But no, he's been making that pass to Backstrom early in the game. It was right on his stick for a wide open net. I mean, you or I, if we were standing there, would have knocked that one in too.
It's true. And Tom Wilson is his usual self. I like his disciplined play. He's come a long way this season, even after his breakout last year in the playoffs. When he has been in the lineup, that team is very difficult to beat.
Let's turn it to the West here. I noticed the Jets finally cracked Jordan Binnington. What was the key there?
Patrick Laine. I mean, Patrick Laine had a multi-point game. Patrick Laine has been more consistent than he's been at any point in the season over these first three games. So St. Louis won the first two on the road, but this is now turning to a situation where there's a lot of pressure on the Blues in game two, and that shows how home ice doesn't always matter in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We've seen it in years past, right? The road team wins the first two, and then the other road team wins the next two. That's what we have a chance of seeing here.
This reminds me of the Columbus-Washington series from the first round last year, where I think the Jets, in my opinion, have outplayed the Blues through two games, but dropped the first two. Then they crack through, break through, get a couple extra goals. They crack Binnington, and now the series, we'll see if it shifts. The one thing I will say about the Jets, I am still worried about Connor Hellebuyck. He hasn't made that save that makes you think, oh, wow, like he really kept the team in the game there. He hasn't done that yet. He has the capability to do so, but we'll see if that happens.
I was really impressed by the Blues on Friday night when they were on the road. They're getting big goals from Ryan O'Reilly. They were, you know, all their lines were working. That's a tough atmosphere to play in, and the St. Louis Blues definitely appear to have what it takes, I think, to win this series. I don't know if they will. I think they need to win. If the Blues can't allow this to get back to a 2-2 and even playing field, right? They have to take full advantage of what they did over the first two games, and therefore they have to bounce back in this game four. I think they probably will. I love what I've seen from David Perron in this series, even strength and even on the power play in game three. I think that he, if you're playing DFS, you got to get Perron in your lineup every single night. And Oscar Sundquist also had that two-goal game in game number two.
I'm definitely on the opposite side of the playing field. I'm heavy on the Jets. Like I said, I think they really controlled and dictated all play through the first two and then broke through three. So, you know what? Again, if you don't have Patrick Laine in your point in DFS at this in these contests, I don't know what you're doing. You got to have him every single night now. And I hope that we're not witnessing a player that kind of takes off the regular season now and then and then plays come playoff time. But hey, I mean, if he has a strong playoff performance, I don't think anybody's going to care.
I think we're still going to value him as a top 25 overall player next year. But yeah, you have that concern when you're talking fantasy drafts like we usually are. But another guy that's really stepped up for Winnipeg is Dustin Byfuglien, who was banged up more often than not over the final couple of months of the season, but has been better than a point per game in this series and fueling the whole offense. So many times you see him enter the zone with that with power moves, and that's what really makes the Winnipeg Jets a scary team to face physically and mentally.
And Jacob Trouba playing well too. Josh Morrissey getting involved in the action. Kyle Connor scoring a beautiful goal too. That has the makings of a solid Jets team, a very hard out. So this should be, this is probably going seven. I hope it is, at least, because I'm really enjoying, this is the series, I will say, when I watch the Western games, I tune in around 9 p.m. our time. This is the series for me that really gets my attention.
Now, the one that gets my attention is the Vegas Sharks one. I mean, the Sharks missed a big opportunity in game two when they went 1-for-8 on the power play and allowed two shorthanded goals. I mean, that's just not your night, and that's a loss that maybe you're going to look back at as the series continues to go on and say, man, if we had gotten a 2-0 series lead and taken advantage of our chances. But the main thing with them, they're missing a couple of key defensemen, right? And just having Burns and Carlson on the ice, whether together or separately, they are liabilities defensively, and you've seen it come out in this series.
Yeah, now that Vlasic's out too, they already had Radim Šimák out. He was skating on the top pairing with Brent Burns in the regular season. So that's not being talked about, is a major loss too. I don't care what team you are. If you lose a first pairing guy, it's a major blow. Even if he's only playing 19 or 20 minutes a game, still a major loss. The one thing that sticks out to me though, Martin Jones, his save percentage since game one, .785. I mean, you can't make this stuff up anymore.
Oh, that's not going to win you a series. That may not win you another game. And I told you that was my concern heading into game two. I thought the Sharks needed, like I was talking about with the Blues entering game four, when you have some matchup discrepancies and on the other side you have potent players like Mark Stone, like Max Pacioretty, and Paul Stastny, who, by the way, combined for all six goals in the win in game three with just unbelievable effort from those three. You have to take advantage of the opportunities when you have them, and that's what the Sharks missed out on. They could be looking back at that for a while.
And what is this phenomenon with the Sharks about allowing goals in the first minute of the period?
I know.
You can't play that
periods.
Way. All three periods.
Last night.
And I think that happened in game one or two as well, where they allowed one real quick. It was like, what, you can't get back in the game. You can't. I know you have a lot of offensive weapons. Your defense has weapons too. But you can't mentally think, okay, now the whole game plan is different because you're chasing the game. You're no longer dictating play. You're just chasing it. You're getting a little over-aggressive. Evander Kane's going completely off the rails against Ryan Reeves. Just stay away from the guy. You have a 30-goal scorer in Evander Kane leaving the ice for 5 minutes after fighting Ryan Reeves, who, forgive me for saying this, but is a complete non-impact player. You can't waste time like that. Just laugh at him and move on. Evander Kane is a 30-goal scorer.
I mean, you even had Joe Thornton in that game throw a questionable hit. I mean, you need these guys on the ice. You got to stay disciplined. Evander Kane was in the box, then out of the box, and then less than a minute later was back in the box.
So how can you get any flow going when you have all these guys taking penalties, the lines are jumbled up, no one knows who's doing what anymore?
And the San Jose Sharks have been able to, at different points in the series, have been able to get the momentum going. That finish to the first period in Game 2 was one of the most exciting stretches in the NHL that I've seen all season long. When they were down 3-0 with 3 minutes and change left, and they tied the game before the end of the first period. I mean, that is the most exciting thing that I've seen all season. But then afterwards, you know, you give up a quick goal in the second period, the momentum dies, right? How big has the momentum been in that Islanders series from Game 1? I just keep thinking back of that. If they lose Game 1, they might have gotten swept in the series. You really never know.
That's it. It all came down to that overtime. You are exactly right. I will say two more things about this Sharks team. Well, number one, let's look at their opponent. Max Pacioretty. I know everyone's talking about Mark Stone. Let's talk about Max Pacioretty. 3 straight games with 2 points in each. That is money production, and credit to George McPhee for having the guts to go after that. The Vegas has a new top line as far as I'm concerned. It's the Stastny line. That is line one now. A very, very interesting makeover to that team dating back to last season, completely night and day. But the one thing I do want to say to finalize the series about the Sharks, if they had a backup goaltender that was at all capable of playing hockey, that would be the starter from here on out. It would have been the starter since December 31st. I'm so tired of Martin Jones allowing these leaky goals.
Aaron Dell came in to relieve Martin Jones in the first period of that game, too. He actually looked good in that game. I was wondering going into game 3 if they would dare to start him. They didn't. I mean, the problem with Aaron Dell is that he's gotten torched in 2 appearances this year against the Golden Knights, so you worry about that. You can't get down 3-0 early again, even though they came back in the game 2. But, yeah, the goaltending is a weakness. Defense is a weakness. The 3 lines right now, Vegas's 3 lines looking better, right? Cody Eakin scored in game 2. The top line's been quiet, the top line from last year. But it's amazing how that second line, if you want to call them the top line, Stastny, Stone, Pacioretty, sometimes you forget they weren't even in the mix last year. They're adding this team, and that goes to the point that I made entering the series where I think the winner of this series could come out of the Western Conference. I think it's probably going to be Vegas, but I wouldn't count the Sharks out just yet.
I wouldn't either, and all it takes is the Sharks to allow 3 or fewer goals, and they will win those games. But to me, that looks like a tall ask for them at this hour. So Calgary, Colorado, Calgary was a favorite in the West. They split 1-1 at home against Colorado. Not a terrible result for them. I thought they played well in both games. Mike Smith played really well. I thought what he was doing through the first period of game 2 was what you could call historic, how well he was playing. But number 29 came to play in OT. Anytime you go to overtime and McKinnon's on the ice, it's usually going to end in the favor of the Avalanche.
Well, it's great to see Mikko Rantanen playing well. He set up that goal from McKinnon. McKinnon, of course, bursting into the zone like he does better than maybe any player in the league and finishing that game off. And you mentioned Mike Smith was playing out of this world over the first 2 games, and they could only get a split at home. That lends me to believe that the Avalanche could come out with some energy here and change the tide of the series. So that's definitely upset alert for me. I know we've had some surprises so far. Not many people are talking about the Avalanche, but hey, if they get Cale Makar in their lineup, especially if Sam Girard's banged up, that's a potential X factor, no doubt.
Cale Makar, Hobie Baker winner, had a huge season for UMass, so I'm excited to see what he brings. Yeah, with Girard out, he should be elevated. He should play. I'm with you, though, Pete. I am a little bit worried about the Flames. I think I will stick to my original call in our preview show that this series is all about the second lines. Whoever second line is going to outproduce the other will win the series. Again, Calgary's second line has 1 night off, and you see them drop the game to Colorado. So look for that to be the story on the road. Calgary was a pretty good road team this year. I don't think they'll have trouble splitting there in Denver, but crazier things have happened.
Now, another team that split entering game 3 is Nashville and Dallas out west. I mean, what's your pulse on this series so far? I felt like Nashville maybe didn't even deserve to split the first 2 games. They didn't play. I know they outshot heavily Dallas in game two, but still, Dallas was getting some quality chances that they could have cashed in on, but luckily a big goal from Craig Smith in overtime.
This is quietly shaping up to be one of the best series. I'm glad that we're ending on this one, and it is hard to believe that Dallas lost game two after Bishop made 40 saves. He got more points than Pecorine did in FanDuel, and Ben Bishop lost the game. So that says everything you need to know. We again, to go back to our preview show here, what we said, if Dallas gets depth scoring, they're not going to lose the series. Unfortunately, in that game, they did not have that depth scoring. They didn't get that extra little boost from their bottom six or even their second line down. So that would be the one thing to me that if they are going to get that, they're going to win the series.
And yeah, Dallas is a great home team, especially when they're playing low scoring hockey. So it's not like they need three or four goals to win these home games. They've been winning low scoring home games all season long and getting consistent goaltending from Ben Bishop every single night when he's healthy. So thankfully he is healthy, and I think Dallas has a big opportunity here, like Colorado. It's the same type of situation. They could win both and put a lot of pressure on the top seed.
And they haven't played a home playoff game since the 2015-16 season, which sounds mentally like it was right around the corner, but it really wasn't. We've seen a ton of hockey since then. And I believe in that series, Tyler Seguin only played, I think it was two games. I think he was either injured or something was going on there. But regardless, I think they're going to step up, this Dallas team at home, give the fans a real treat. And like you mentioned, quality home team. When Tyler Seguin's going, when Jamie Benn's going, when Radulov's going, and then we get that one contribution from either Heiskanen or Lindell on the back end, that is going to be a very tough out for the Predators.
And we haven't seen a ton from John Klingberg, right? Even at the season at large, it's not like he's been reeling off multi-point games every single night. I think he has a higher gear. It's nice to see Jamie Benn score a dirty goal in game one, game two. That's what they need here at home. They need Jamie Benn to be scoring goals. If they get that, they will win one or possibly both of those games and really put a lot of pressure on Nashville going back to Tennessee.
So if you have any last-minute questions on these games for DFS or just who we like in general, hit us up on Twitter at NHL Reese for myself, at NHL Jensen for Pete, at NHL Fantasy for both of us. This is 24/7 coverage. We have the pulse. We're watching all the games, so hit us up.
It's a great time of year to be playing DFS. Get your lineups ready. Hit us up with any questions, like Rob said. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Leave us a review if you get the chance. This is a big time of year. We're getting some new traction from a lot of different platforms and stuff, so we appreciate everybody who's tuning in and giving us reviews. So for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.